Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Protecting What Matters. I'm Barry Fisher.
And I'm Susan Blaze.
My number one is back where she's. I needed her. You know, thank you for being back, dear. It's wonderful. Protecting What Matters is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore our history, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. And that couldn't be more appropriate than today, talking about the wine industry in the Central Coast. And we've got two great guys visiting with us today, Jack and Matthew Jacobs of Jacobs Consulting and Wine Services. You're going to learn all about what's going on in the wine industry and what the future holds. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Just a couple of notes from last week's show. We understand that there were a number of people that were calling in and couldn't get through, and that's probably was my user error. I did not see the phone lines lighting up. We're going to do better today. So if you have any questions, again, 238-KPRL. Also, I'm happy to report we've had some website issues, but we being Blaze and Bear Insurance, but we're now back up and running with our website and particularly the radio page that has all of our radio shows posted now. And that direct website address is pwmradio.com. So you can visit us and hear all of our past shows on our website. So we're happy about that. So, Susan, you were away last week. You had a great conference, and I think you got a story to tell us.
Yes, I was in Rhode Island, which is my hometown where I was born and raised. And I went to a meeting with a group of friends that was a bit esoteric, but it was very informative and it was just fun to see everybody live. And we had one person that everybody calls Noam, his real name is Antonio, who talked about the Iroquois Confederacy, which for hundreds of years and to this day operates on a means of unanimous consent, unanimous government, meaning that in a tribe, it has to be probably a small tribe, it couldn't be millions of people, but they make rules based on unanimity. Every single person has to agree. And he gave the example of the tribe decided that it would be great to build a road on the property from point A to point B, but it goes through Harry's property. If Harry stood up and said, I'm sorry, you're not putting that road on my property, you'll have to figure out something else, then that's exactly what the tribe would have to do. They'd get all vitriol and angry and upset, but then they'd figure out a different way to do it. And it was just a really fascinating concept of how to run things. Something that, you know, can't work on the larger scale, but could work on a smaller scale.
Well, it's interesting. Did women have the vote?
Yes. Oh, well, the women didn't come to the meetings where the men decided, but the women are the ones who voted who would be on the council.
Really?
So they had the ultimate power of who's going to be there making the decisions, but then the men got together to make the decisions.
Got to watch out for the women.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we have a great father and son team, Jack and Matt Jacobs, with us today. Again, it's Jacobs Consulting and Winemaking Services. And they have such a terrific background, I'm going to let them do their own introduction. So, Jack, why don't you start first?
Hi, good afternoon, Barry and Susan. Thanks for having us on the show. Appreciate it. I'm Jack Jacobs. This will be my 42nd year in the wine industry. My wife and I moved out of Southern California, San Fernando Valley, in 82. We moved up to Sonoma County. I was very fortunate to get a job working on a bottling line, bottling wine. Worked my way up to what they call cellar rat, which is working in the cellar, cleaning tanks, pulling hoses. Still do a bit of that when my son allows me to. And worked up to assistant winemaker at a few different wineries from Sonoma County to Lake County, back to Sonoma County, and then down to the Central Coast in 2003.
Well, that's great. Thanks for being with us. And Matt, I know you probably weren't ready to mention this, but you were a professional ballet dancer, correct?
Yeah, I actually started here in Paso Robles at Class Act Dance in high school, and then did that till about 2011, and then moved back to the area and got a job in the wine business, and went from wine and back to beer a couple times, moved up to Ontario, Canada, learned sparkling wine and cold climate winemaking, and then moved back just 2 years ago to the Central Coast, spent some time in Monterey, and then moved back to Paso and got into the business with Jack.
So I guess winemaking runs in your blood, right?
Yeah, I was the kid running around on the catwalks and climbing up the barrel racks and, you know, running around the winery, causing trouble.
I cannot resist asking this question. What did you learn in ballet that helps you with your current work?
I'm much more agile than most people.
Oh, there you go. I love it. Yeah.
What a great answer. So listen, your consultancy offers a unique value proposition to its clients. Can you give us a high-level overview for starters in the few minutes we have left in this segment?
Okay. Sure, yeah. So a lot of small wineries in particular don't necessarily need or have enough work for a full-time winemaker and winemaking staff. What we can offer to small producers especially is we can provide very high quality, very comprehensive winemaking services, at as many hours or as needed to do that job. So you're not paying somebody, a team, 40 hours a week to do this. You're paying us, a lot when you need it and not when you don't, sort of thing. And then we also have the ability to come in and audit and help revitalize wineries that are already in existence, but maybe, can use a fresh set of eyes.
So you're like variable cost.
That's what I was going to say. Variable cost versus fixed cost, which makes all the difference.
What percentage in the Central Coast, what percentage of the wineries here would qualify for that? Because you got some of your big guys here now, but I mean, what percentage of wineries would need your services?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, we have over 400 bonded wineries in this county. That doesn't mean necessarily 400 brick and mortar like wineries themselves, but 400 licenses. Most of those licenses are under 5,000 cases. And at that level, it's kind of hard to keep a winemaker busy, you know. That's so that 1 to 3,000 case range, which is quite common. That's sort of our that can be, I would say that's our focus.
Okay, great.
So you mentioned that. Is there other things besides just the size and the amount of wine they produce that helps you define an ideal client?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the experience of the winery. Sometimes the winemakers and the owners are coming on, you know, they have other jobs. You have to, in order to start out in the wine business, have somewhere money coming in from somewhere. And that being the case, they're going by the seat of their pants. Haven't gone to college for it, haven't had the time to work their way up, such as I did or Matthew did in the cellar. So they, small clients, need somebody to guide them through. A lot of times finding flaws that they didn't know they had, finding ways to make better wine, just because they don't have the experience to see that on their own.
Right. We know people, lots of people actually, who, made a fortune as an executive in some big company, or they had a big business that they sold for lots of money, and they have the dream to be a winemaker, but they have no experience whatsoever. And I bet those are great clients for you.
Well, and unfortunately, just because you made 5 gallons in your garage does not qualify you to make wine on a production commercial scale with shelf stability and longevity.
So is it still true that to make $1 million in the wine business, you have to spend 2?
Yeah, but double it and half it.
And now a lot of the wineries are getting into cider and distilled beverages and that sort of thing. Is that a lower cost entry point than making wine?
In a lot of ways, yeah, because you don't usually with ciders, just to get into it, you're not necessarily doing barrel aging. You can either purchase apples, glean apples, press them yourself, small presses. So the apple juice in itself is usually cheaper to come by, either as apples as opposed to production wine grapes and apple juice. So yes, it's easier, cheaper to get into. You don't usually need the higher end equipment, just to get started. And you're trying to do something that's quicker turnaround than most of the wines.
And the most key point with cider is that in a winery, your tanks and your equipment is not being used for the majority of the year. That's sitting empty. So you've spent all this money to build this production facility, and then it sits empty for 9 months. Well, over those 9 months, you can make cider and fill those tanks. So that's a big draw and a better use of your investment.
That makes a lot of sense. I never even knew that you could use the same tanks for wine and for cider.
Well, not only that, but cider in itself is a winery product, not a brewery product. A lot of people associate it with breweries because it's carbonated, and so consequently they want to think every brewery should have cider, but in fact, legally, it has to be done at a winery, not a brewery.
Oh, that's interesting.
So listen, we're going to continue to enjoy the wine that Jack and Matt brought, and we'll see you on the other side of the break.
Hopefully.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
This is a Fox News alert. A verdict in the lawsuit accusing former President Donald Trump of raping advice columnist E. Jean Carroll in 1996. The jury found he did not rape her, but the former president is found liable for battery and defamation. Trump must pay $5 million. The jury has been deliberating for less than 3 hours. President Biden is meeting with House and Senate leaders next hour to discuss the debt ceiling issue. White House maintaining its stance on raising the debt limit first and foremost.
Default threatens 8 million jobs, a recession, retirement accounts, and Social Security and Medicare payments.
As White House spokeswoman Corinne Jean-Pierre, House Republicans recently did pass legislation that ties raising the debt limit to spending cuts. That's been a deal breaker for Democrats. America is listening to Fox News.
This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block offices. As many tax professionals are closing for the regular tax season, we are staying open through the extended deadline with experienced tax professionals that are small business certified to meet all your tax needs. Whether you're only looking for tax preparation or want to take advantage of our small business bookkeeping and payroll services, from personal taxes, self-employed individuals, to trusts, LLCs, and corporations, your locally owned and operated H&R Block office is still open to help you. Call your nearest H&R Block office today to make an appointment with a licensed tax professional.
Are you tired of spending your precious time cleaning your home or office? Let Made in Slow Cleaning Services take care of it for you. Our team of experienced professionals is dedicated to providing a safe, secure, and sanitized cleaning services that are tailored to meet the unique needs of our senior citizens, residential, commercial, and busy adults. Whether you need a one-time deep cleaning or ongoing maintenance service, we're here to help. So why wait? Contact Made in Slow today to schedule your appointment and experience the peace of mind that comes with a clean, safe, and secure environment. Contact madeinslow.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jack and Matt Jacobs of Jacobs Consulting and Wine Services. The KPRL call-in number is 805-238-5775. That was not a wine-related slip, okay?
Are you sure?
Yeah, 238-KPRL. And now what we want to do is talk a little bit about how an existing winery can take their business to the next level. So let's start our discussion with that. It seems to me that I looked at your website, you start with a comprehensive cellar audit. What is that and what does that process look like?
So one of the hardest parts about owning and running a business, a winery is, and actually any business, is being able to objectively look at your own product and your own service, what you offer, and sometimes having an outside set of eyes is helpful. And it takes a lot of courage to be able to ask for that, but if you can, it's almost always better. It doesn't have to be us, but have someone that knows what they're doing come in and tell you what they think. So what we kind of do is, as the wine production side, specifically wine production, we can taste your product from what's in the bottle all the way to what's aging in the barrel, and make determinations based off of that sensory evaluation about your cellar practices, about to make an evaluation of the wine quality. And if that's something that we can help improve, then we would provide a report and training to improve it.
That's great.
You've mentioned that one of the biggest traps existing wineries suffer from is house palate, a term I've never heard. Can you explain what that is and how it happens?
House palate comes from just the fact that you don't taste other people's wines. You get so used to, a lot of home winemakers especially fall into this, where they're tasting their own wine, they're handing it out to their friends, and of course their friends are going to get free wine, so they're going to tell them how great it is and give us more.
Not us.
But you get so used to it, and if something's going wrong, or there's a spoilage of some sort, or you're just off on a tangent where the wine isn't as good as it can be, you get what we call house palate. You think it's great, but you don't really know that it's getting somewhere off. And that's where we can come in and kind of correct that and push that back.
So do most winemakers, do they, when they make wine and then, you know, start moving, how can I ask this question the way I want to ask it? Are they making wine for themselves first and their customers second? Or do they ever really ask themselves, what do my customers want when they're making their wine?
That's a delicate question, because
that's why I asked.
Yeah, it requires a delicate answer too, because it depends on one hand. There's some level of art in winemaking, especially blending, and that is really important. And you want to be making wine. You want to be making wine using your best instincts and making wine that you enjoy as well. On the other hand, you don't necessarily want to be a cold, hard, professional hired gun winemaker that's just making wine exactly for the consumer and not for themselves. So finding that balance of both is what a professional winemaker is. If you're just making wine for yourself, that's irresponsible. And if you're making wine for just the consumer, then that's no fun. And what's the point? So
it's a question of balance, like so many things. I mean, when you were speaking, Matt, I thought about artists. It's the same thing, about creating art just for yourself or creating art for the customer, and kind of that fine balance, because winemaking is an art, right?
Well, you have a style that's yours. It's just like art. You know, you still develop a style, but that style may not be commercially acceptable just because you think it's great. It may not be something that works, and that's where we can come in and try to push it along in a better direction.
Get it to the golden mean, right in the middle, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, Matt, I think while you were doing the ballet thing, you also went to diplomacy school, too.
Right.
So what are some common wine quality factors that winemakers need to know about, but I think the consumer should know about them as well?
Well, so there's kind of two levels of wine quality. There's technical faults, which are also sort of a gray area, but sort of not a gray area. You know, some bacterial spoilages, oxidation, things like that, that are absolutely perceptible at certain levels. And there's even legal restrictions on certain spoilages, like volatile acidity is a very common one.
Volatile acidity? What the heck is that?
Vinegar.
Yeah, basically vinegar. Yeah, yeah.
Now that even I can taste.
Yeah. Well. So, but you might not be able to taste it at low levels, and at low levels, it can actually be additive and nice to the wine. You get over a certain threshold, and it starts to really, really detract from the wine, and that's completely 100%. All right, wait, 90% manageable by cellar practices. Sometime there are obviously some, you know, acts of God sort of things that you can't help. But there's legal restrictions, then there's too much oxidation, is just the wine doesn't taste good. Your customer, you want that customer to come back and buy another bottle. They may not complain about it the first time, but they're not going to buy the second bottle.
What's that caramely kind of flavor you get to a wine that's just kind of going over the edge? What is that called?
Often oxidation. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and oxidation occurs in several different ways, and it depends on the style of oxidation and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, that's all manageable in the cellar, is just comes down to good practice.
Does that obviously that gets taken care of while the wine's still in the barrel, right?
Well, it's multifactorial. Basically, anything post fermentation. So grapes come in. You can there's a style of winemaking called reductive winemaking where you limit the oxidation all the way from grapes all the way to the bottle. The whole way through, there's oxidative winemaking where you actually encourage oxidation pre-fermentation. Then you ferment, so that's turning sugar into alcohol. At that point, once that's done, you're managing your oxidation the whole way through. So ideally, you don't allow it to happen in the first place, and then you keep it from happening as it goes into the bottle, and then it goes into the bottle with minimal oxidation.
This sounds like a lot of chemistry.
It's practical chemistry. It's, you know, it's very, it's very subjective.
One thing I noted here is, especially if a winemaker is also growing their own fruit, suppose something bad happens with the weather or whatever, and some of their fruit is not really up to par, the temptation to use it anyway because this is your income is got to be really strong. Like, are there ways you can overcome that? Or is the quality of the fruit essential and there's nothing you can do about it if it's not right?
Well, that's where experience comes in. There are certain things you can overcome, certain things you can't. And a lot of times somebody who is new to the business or has only been dealing with their own product isn't aware of that, you know, and then you see it through experience or through education, which are quite the same. How to deal with fruit that comes in that's too ripe, fruit that's moldy. A certain amount you can overcome by using it and treating it. Certain amount you just have to sort out and bite the bullet. Just say, hey, the quality is not going to be where we want it if we use this fruit.
Right. There's a saying that the test of a winemaker is not what the vineyard gives you in a good year. It's what you can do when what the vineyard gives you in a bad year.
We know that for sure. We tried to make wine with our neighbors for a few years, and we were good. We got lucky a couple of times, and then something went wrong, and we had no idea how to fix it.
Where were you when we needed you? when you say it's you know, is it the fruit or is it really the vine? I mean, so, you know, these guys must spend a tremendous amount of money, and gals, to plant these vineyards. I mean, how do you know you're getting really a great vine that can produce good fruit?
Well, that comes down to one experience. You're looking at what do you want to grow where you're living. I mean, I have somebody who wants to grow Pinot Noir, but they live in East Paso. Probably not a great idea. Either move or plant something else. You know, it's just not the best climate. So that's the first thing. And that's where, you know, getting in touch, we'll talk about later with starting a winery or starting a vineyard. Getting the right fruit in the right place, and then how you farm it, you know, that's experience also, and having the right canopy management for, you know, everything, you know, spraying, whatever you're doing to manage that crop, you know, you have to be able to be on top of it and make sure that you're avoiding all the pitfalls. And if you don't have the experience, that's where somebody comes in to consult and help you put that together.
Yeah, that makes sense. Once you've identified some of these issues or problems, how do you solve them?
That's where, if it's depends on the problem, but it's, you know, training, equipment, barrel quality, things like that. So the I didn't get to before, but the second level. So there's obvious like technical faults, and then there's balance problems. And balance problems are very common also, and that's too much acidity, too little acidity, over oaked, under oaked. You know, there's a lot of stylistic choice things, and those are things that are fixed also with, you know, the quality of your barrels, the quality of your equipment, your sorting processes, your fermentation and cap management. All of that is dictated to some level by your facility and your equipment that you have, including your barrels.
This is totally sort of off the
off the reservation
off the script, but that made me think about so many of these wineries bring in teams, you know, to pick and to do all these various jobs. Is there quality concerns with that? Like if you bring in the wrong pickers, you might get the fruit that you don't want or something like that?
Well, yeah, very much so. A lot of times that's where you bring in a harvesting company, somebody who has a crew, and then it's up to the winery, if they know what they're looking for, to dictate to the supervisor of that crew, I don't want any green fruit, I don't want raisins, and go through. Once that happens, they need to be out there looking at what comes in. When it gets to the winery, then you're making those decisions again. Do we sort this fruit? Do we not sort the fruit? And those are all decisions that take experience. Yeah, because you can't taste a book, you can't smell a book.
Right. You know. Yeah. Boy, it's so complex. Every step of the way has all these issues you have to contend with.
Yeah. So kind of switching gears just a little bit, but it certainly seems that the success of your clients, particularly, the 1,000 to 10,000 case winery, I mean, a lot of their success is based on their wine clubs, okay, and developing a wine club. Could you just touch on that? I know that's not necessarily your bailiwick, but I think that that's an important aspect of things.
Well, and that's something we'll get into later, and we talk about a client that wants to start a winery from scratch. It's first, what's your business model? And in that 1,000 to 5,000 case range, it is very hard to be anything but direct to consumer. And usually that means a brick and mortar tasting room with a wine club. And so that's developing that wine club. That's what pays for bottlings. That's what pays for your fruit. Pays for harvest. It's the consistent, stable, reliable income that shows up on time.
Well,
it's kind of like we've always said if you're doing it all, you're a farmer, you're in the chemistry business. And you're also doing the hospitality as well. So, well, listen, the bumper music is coming up, and we will return with Matt and Jack in a few minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stock indexes ending up in negative territory today as investors await White House talks on the debt limit and tomorrow's inflation data report. The Dow down 56, the S&P 19 lower, the NASDAQ falling 77. Boeing shares seeing positive movement after the company announced it signed a deal to deliver as many as 300 737 MAX 10 jets to European discount airline Ryanair. Vaccine maker Novavax announcing today it's reducing its global workforce by 25% in an effort to cut down on expenses and shift its focus to key priorities. The COVID vaccine is Novavax's lone commercial product. It's only administered less than 89,000 doses of the vaccine in the U.S. Small businesses were losing confidence in the economy last month. The National Federation of Independent Business says its Small Business Optimism Index declined in April. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Rich Dennison, invested in you.
Jesse Kelly here. I'm not a financial expert, but I do look for solid investment opportunities for investment growth and protection against loss. I do know that putting all your eggs in one basket is not a good financial plan. Securing your IRA or 401k with real gold and silver with Oxford Gold is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Or you can buy precious metals and keep them in your safe. One app, one call, and you pick your precious metals. That's 833-404-GOLD. That's 833-404-G-O-L-D.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Dubs Paso Soul Food Grill is now open at 14th and Park in Paso Robles. Fresh and flavorful, their food is prepared daily using only the best quality ingredients. Fresh fried chicken made to order from scratch, crab and crawfish bags, and their best-seller catfish. Dubs Paso Soul Food Grill. Everything tastes like a home-cooked meal. Fried green tomatoes, hush puppies, black-eyed peas, cornbread, collard greens, red beans and rice, mac and cheese. It's all authentic home-style food that's good for your soul. Enjoy classic R&B hits on their sound system while dining indoors or out. You can also order online for pickup or relax at home and get great soul food delivered right to your door. See their menu at pasogrill.com. Family owned and operated, they love locals because they are local. Dubs Paso Soul Food Grill. Look for the big Paso Grill sign at 14th and Park.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jack and Matt Jacobs of Jacobs Consulting and Winemaking Services. We're having a great show here. It's really fascinating to listen to these guys. The call-in number for questions or comments is 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Susan, why don't you lead off here?
One of the sort of mythologies in winemaking is this whole issue of having a wine bottle with a cork or with a screw cap. Some people have, you know, biases either way. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, well, once again, it is a bias, and a lot of the wine industry isn't necessarily right or wrong. Most of the wine down in New Zealand, Australia, something like 95% of the wine now is all screw cap. It's come a long way with protective barriers that allow a certain amount of oxidation. The winery I've been working at for the last 12 years, we do both. And it's we make the wine differently based on the closure.
Really?
Yeah, a wine that we were going to put under a cork finish, which are all of our reserves, is designed with a little more tannin, a little more structure. It's going to age longer. The cork is going to allow a certain amount of oxidation, just like a barrel would, to allow that wine to change over a long period of time. The white wine, most of the white wines and lighter bodied wines we make with a little less tannin and a little brighter fruit, and we put them under screw cap. Once the bottle is bottled with a screw cap and it's got out of what we call bottle shock, sell it. And when you get it, drink it, because it's not going to necessarily improve as it sits in the bottle. It's different with cork finish. And it's personal preference. Corks are still the single most sustainable thing in the wine industry. They don't cut the trees down. They just cut the bark off. The trees last hundreds of years. They continue to use the bark, and the corks are 100% recyclable.
That's really cool. We were in Portugal a few years ago for a friend's son's wedding, and we went to a place where they had all these cork trees, and we got to see how it grows. It's fascinating. Yeah. Just like a layer on top, and they can just take that off without hurting the tree.
Exactly.
So it's really kind of cool.
Yeah. So to expand on that, the you know, brass tacks down to the actual costs and risks involved in that decision, though, is the cost of cork is wildly more than screw caps. And screw cap is a almost 100% risk-free closure. It is a true closure. There's no risk of contamination, oxidative spoilage, which is a real risk with cork because it is a natural product. So, and then one of the most expensive wines in the world, one of the best wines in the world, is screw cap. And the technology, like you were saying, with the permeable membranes, they can age. They, you know, you can choose to have a purely no oxidative, non-permeable membrane, but you can if you want, and you can have a very, very high quality wine under screw cap with no negative consequences.
I can see where this is going, Jack.
Do you want to make money?
Okay. Generational thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Would you like to touch on some other terms we hear? Organic sustainability, biodynamic. Would you like to touch on that?
Okay. So I think our SIP sustainable movement in California is fantastic. The motivations are fairly good, you know, fairly true. It's in general for the betterment of of the industry and the betterment of our environment, which is great. Organic is a really nice marketing term that is very useful and does have some positive impact. But at the end of the day, is a lot of marketing. And then biodynamic also, you know, can have real world benefits and is, you know, a way to truly eliminate synthetic fertilizers. Great. On the other hand, it serves largely as a marketing term. So sustainability is kind of the core thing. On the other hand, all these the certification businesses that give you your stamp of approval are all out there to make money too. So take everything with a grain of salt.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Let's shift gears here a little bit. And what sort of guidance can you provide someone who wants to live the dream of starting their own winery?
Well, so we actually just had a meeting with a new client the other day about this. You know, my first question is always, "What's your go-to-market strategy?" Because you have to. In the old days, as Jack always likes to tell the story, you know, you want to make wine. Well, you buy a piece of land, you plant grapes, you wait 5 years. Then you build a winery and then you age that for 3 years and then you put it in the bottle and then you might get to sell it 10 years down the road, right? You know, that's not a way to make money and that's not a way to run any business at all, you know? So nowadays it's the other way. You start with the marketing campaign. Then we can make and you figure out your go-to-market strategy. How are you actually going to move the wine? And that will dictate backward your business model. So do you need a piece of land? Are you going to do a brick and mortar tasting room or are you going to sell online? Are you going to sell into distribution? All that changes the type of fruit we source, the price of fruit we source. If you're going to sell $100 bottles of Cabernet direct to a consumer, you can afford $5,000 a ton for fruit. If you're going to put it on a grocery store shelf for $14, you can't afford $5,000 a ton for fruit. So everything starts from what's your actual sales strategy, and then you can craft your business plan backward from that.
That makes so much sense. It's like beginning with the end in mind, right? And then going towards the ultimate goal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you match those business strategies to your clients' dreams? How do you kind of bring them into reality here?
How much money do they have? Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, where are you going with it? Just distribution, you know, and do you need to build the facility? Can you do it custom crush somewhere else? We can source equipment. We can source grapes, either new equipment, used equipment, anything to build your plan. What's your expansion like? You know, you can buy certain equipment, custom crush someplace else with the idea that eventually you're going to build your own facility matching the quantity, you know, that your end product is trying to do. If you're in this to, you know, pour wine for the customers and hang out on the barrels and pull samples, that's a lot different than trying to be a mainstay at, you know, Albertsons.
Right.
So what are the key elements in the process? I mean, you know, I think you mentioned some of them, but you know, let's do a little deeper dive here.
Well, in terms of actually starting a new winery, how that actually goes.
Right.
Yeah. So first and foremost, it's figuring out the licensing, you know, so
a lot of regulation in this business, isn't there?
Alcohol, you know, it's the, you know, alcohol, tobacco, all those guys, firearms, they all have huge amounts of regulation, and it all ties back to taxes. So, you know, state wants their cut and federal wants their cut. And you gotta make sure that your licensing is lined up. And that's why there's whole professional compliance firms that this is what they do. You know, so you're looking at $5,000 to $10,000 of compliance work just to get your licensing in place, and in order to do that, you have to know, okay, are we trying to build a tasting room? Are we going to, you know, and then that requires, well, that would be county approvals and city approvals as well, you know. So it goes back to, you know, we're starting with what's your original plan. But then, yeah, if we eventually get through, we get through licensing, fantastic. We go work out grape contracts. Yeah, great. Yeah, labels, packaging. That's a very long, drawn out process also. So that needs to start before the grapes have even been picked, right? So then if we actually get to the fun part and buying grapes and, you know, then bringing them into the winery and making the wine that the client's interested in making, you know, that's just all the fluff around the red tape. So
I think I'd rather just drink the stuff.
That's how I am. But yeah. Then when you're in the winemaking process, you as consultants, you really take it over pretty much, especially for these newer wineries, right? How often are you at the client's facility where they're making the wine?
Well, it depends a lot on obviously the size of the facility, but some clients were there every day. You know, we'll stop, even if it's only for an hour, we'll stop at, you know, each client every day, seeing how the fermentations are going, smelling what's going on, tasting what's happening, making sure that nothing's creeping up that is some sort of spoilage or something that you don't want, tannin levels in the juice, things like that, when to press, making those decisions. So we might stop at, you know, 3 or 4 different clients in a day, tasting different wines and seeing what's going on. Once things are pressed and they're in barrels and resting, then we're into blending, getting ready to bottle. You know, so it's less time on site.
Great.
Okay, well, stay tuned, folks. We're going to be wrapping up with Jack and Matt here after the break.
I don't know what to do.
About what?
My wife wants to remodel the kitchen, but we don't have that kind of money.
Want to see what we did? Take a peek at this.
Wow, that looks great. Who did your remodel?
It's not a remodel. I had Espeak Painting paint our cabinets. Now they're like new, and they're my wife's favorite color.
Espeak Painting, huh?
Yeah, they're local, right here in Atascadero. They're easy to deal with, from the estimate all the way to the final brushstroke. And getting a quote was easy. I did it online. It's way cheaper than a remodel.
Then I better take a peek at this Espeak Painting.
Well, you know what they say, happy wife, happy life.
You got that right.
Take a peek at Espeak Painting and get a beautiful new look for your cabinets without an expensive remodel. Espeak specializes in cabinet painting as well as residential exteriors, interiors, and HOAs. Take a peek at Espeak Painting. Book a quote appointment quickly and easily 24/7 at espeakpainting.com. That's SPEEKpainting.com.
Wesley here from Stove and Spa Center. I just wanted to thank you for your patience the last few weeks. We are now open again on Saturdays. Once again, you can see and explore all of our hearth products, wood, gas, pellet, and electric, to keep you warm and cozy this cold and wet winter. Maybe you are looking to enjoy the benefits of what hot tubs, soothing water can do for your body to melt away the stress that living brings on. Or perhaps you want to get in better shape this year by exercising in one of our swim spas. There are many models and sizes. We even have models with treadmills built into them. We have a large showroom with lots of products to sell. Plus, lead times to get the products has been greatly reduced, and of course, you can still get all your supplies and even get your water tested for your pool and spa. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Come check us out at Stove and Spa Center, 7485 El Camino Real, Atascadero, between Curbarill and Morrill Roads. All products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com.
Have you ever considered running for public office? Have you ever seen yourself as making a difference to improve public policy? Have you ever looked at your school board, water board, or city council and said, I could do a better job? That means you should be calling Paramount Communications, the Central Coast leading Republican political consulting firm. With a successful track record of electing fiscally conservative pro-business candidates to local office, Paramount Communications is the choice of candidates on the Central Central Coast. Whether it's strategy, direct mail, graphics, digital, television, or radio advertising, Paramount is your political campaign source. Their one-stop shopping approach saves money and time and ensures a smooth running, successful campaign. If you think you have what it takes to enter the political arena, they want to talk with you. Call them at 831-595-8914 or go to winwithparamount.com and mention this ad for a free one-hour consultation.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're wrapping up the show with Jack and Matt Jacobs of Jacobs Wine Consulting. Susan, you had a question about 238-5775, 238-KPRL.
I had a question because I have been told somewhere along the line by at some winery that the key to wines lasting a number of years versus you have to drink them in 2 or 3 years is the level of acid. Is that true?
Yes, in part. Acid combined with tannin, especially in red wines, is what tannin's the backbone of the wine. So in the winemaking process and also finishing, because you can add tannins to wines later on, and that's part of what we do is either winemaking or just tasting. But that tannin level and acid will accentuate that tannin. So depending on that level, if it's not high enough, the wines can be cloying. They can literally fall apart early. So having that balance is something that comes with experience and another set of eyes and palate, you know, on your wine to make them age longer.
All right. So, you know, finally, to those of us who've watched the Central Coast wine industry grow over the last 25 years, in your views, what does the future hold for us as it pertains to growth and consolidation? I mean, are we just going to become another Napa?
Hopefully not. I'll tell you one thing, that working on the Central Coast, and I've worked Sonoma County, I've worked with people in Napa, Lake County. Right now, the Central Coast and Paso, in essence, is the most exciting place on the planet to make wine. We have winemakers from all over the world that have searched for a place to make wine and come to Paso to make wine. We've seen recently a number of large corporations and large wineries buy out some of the high-end wineries in the area. That just tells you how important our area is. Napa is pretty much all corporate at this point. Sonoma County's worked toward that. I can see that happening here in the long term, but there's always going to be the small guy who's got that dream to, you know, put a couple thousand cases on the shelf and hang out on the barrels and pour wine for his customers.
One question I had is, we've sort of hinted at it in this discussion, is that you as consultants provide different levels of service to clients, right? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Right. So we kind of phrase it as, you know, custom tailored service. So if you're a new winery and you want us to just take care of everything, and we can get that, We can help you from business plan to bottle. You know, that's that we can be all inclusive. Or if you're an existing winery and you just need to have somebody on speed dial to call and ask a question, you know, we're you know, bounce an idea off of. We can be all the way to just that. And we have clients right now that are exactly you know, both ends of the spectrum and in the middle. You know, so there's kind of a lot of flexibility we can offer. We're a small company with that's agile. We're, you know, we can hop on the phone or get in the car at a moment's notice. So
that's very great. Cool.
Yeah.
So how can people get in touch with you?
So you can see our Instagrams and Facebooks at Jacobs Wine Consulting. There's also our website at jacobswine.vin, V-I-N. It's kind of cool. It's a new new URL for the wine industry.
Wow.
And feel free to give me or Jack an email at it's matthew@jacobswine.vin or Jack, J-A-C, at jacobswine.vin. Those are our main ways to contact us. Through Facebook, we have a calendar, and you can even book appointments through the through Facebook.
Very good. You guys are great. We'll have you back again. So let me just kind of wrap up the show here today, Susan, with a couple of ideas, a couple of items. First of all, next week we'll feature Ashley Wilkin of the Rice Partnership. She's one of our local financial advisors, bringing us current on the state of the financial markets and what to expect as we move forward. And I'm absolutely sure she's going to have some great tips on managing your money and in these uncertain times. The other thing I wanted to mention, and this is really important from a public safety perspective, and let me kind of set this up a little bit as we wrap up the show. There were three articles that kind of jumped out at me this weekend, Susan, as I was doing research for the show. First of all, from the Washington Examiner, Gavin Newsom is running around the country telling everybody how great everything is in California from an economic perspective. And basically, candidly, folks, I think he's still running for president.
They're going to prop him up there with that little smirk that I want to slap off his face all the time.
I know. Anyway, but, you know, he's bragging about the title of the article is California's Delusional Governor. And he absolutely is, because while he's, you know, giving speeches at the Milken Institute for Global Conference, California is lagging behind economically most of the other states in the country. And we're also facing a gaping $22 billion budget deficit this year. So that was the first topic. That was the first article that came up. The next article.
Little phrase for him is, let's turn the paradise of California into hell.
There you go. You don't have an opinion on this, do you?
No opinion whatsoever.
No, okay. Then there was this big, the New York Post. It's interesting that these stories are really getting covered on the Eastern news outlets. But basically, the New York Post was trumpeting the fact, or covered the fact, that San Francisco has deployed National Guards and CHP to fight drug zombies in the streets of San Francisco. But when you get into the article, and London Breeze, the airhead mayor, whatever she is, of San Francisco, she's basically, this is a turning point for San Francisco.
Yeah, it sure is. It's just turning the wrong way.
And of course, there's only 14 National Guardsmen that have been called up, and the CHP is writing traffic tickets. So the show is ending, unfortunately. I will do the opening patter as a follow-up to this, because this is a very important public safety matter for the Paso Robles area and the Central Coast. Thanks for joining us today. It's been a great program.
See you next week.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze. Send your questions and show topic ideas to Barry@blazeandbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.